UK, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And we are off and running on the next to last broadcast day of the month of May 2016. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. It is the 30th day of May 2016. For those of you who don't recall, the 30 days have September, April, June, and November. All the rest have 31, save February, and that doesn't rhyme with anything. Yes, it's the 30th of May 2016. It is Moran Monday on the Horn, and folks are filing into the headonradionetwork.com/chat room is how you get there. Yeah, good evening to Labor Man and Little Gray and Tim from L.A., all capably moderated by Lottie and Texas Betsy. Thank you kindly, Labor Man. Lima Charlie on White Rose here in beautiful downtown Moriarty. Wonderful. Good to know. Things have been a little spotty with the Horn server lately, so that is actually quite good, quite beneficial information. And of course, I would be remiss if I did not did Sparky fold space all the way right out of the known universe? Unusual for Sparky not to be here. Maybe he's celebrating Memorial Day. I don't know. We'll find out. Memorial Day. And can we be clear about something? Memorial Day is not Veterans Day. I've been running across this all day long. And, you know, being as I try not to be a total jerk online, just a partial jerk, I guess, I have not run around correcting it. I was just told commemorating Memorial Day, not celebrating it. No, I'd say most people celebrate it. Because, you know, they go out and they barbecue and go to the pool and go swimming and picnicking and things like that. That doesn't sound like commemorating. That sounds like celebrating to me. But let's do get that straight, because that seems to be a thing today. Memorial Day is not Veterans Day. Veterans Day is the day that we celebrate all that and recognize and the service of everyone who's ever been in the armed forces. Memorial Day is the day that we take note of the people who served and died. Okay? I'm Bob Kincaid. In terms of pop culture, I suppose that there is a perfectly good capitalist reason for creating an elision between the two. I mean, it probably helps sell hot dogs or something because, well, you know, the business of America is business. And there's coin to be made out of the graves of fallen soldiers and sailors and Marines and air people. Yeah. but this is a day for commemorating the people who died and noting their sacrifice. As one article that I saw earlier today noted, we need a holiday. We need a, and you know, sometimes the English language falls short. You know, sometimes things like those nifty little German compound nouns can come in so handy, because you take a lot of nouns and you run them all together and they wind up meaning something with an entirely nuanced difference. I mean, as far back as Mark Twain in his awful German, his hilarious essay, the Awful German Language, begins with a discussion of compound nouns and how he collects them and puts them on his mantelpiece. But we need it, yeah. We need a holidays like that. I mean, a holiday just, you know, Christmas. You know, 4th of July. Independence Day. Yeah. Labor Day. But of course, holiday also, it comes from, it's decidedly non-secular. It means holy day, which means that some great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky gets invited to the festivities too. But no, really, Memorial Day for the people who died in the horrible, horrible carnage of any war is noteworthy. It is said that it was begun in, at least here in this part of the North American continent. It was begun, of course, by grieving Southerners who went to decorate the graves of the fallen people who engaged in war against the United States. But it was quickly picked up on the U.S. By people who said, "Well, you know, we probably need to memorialize the people who died to save this nation too," and we went from there. But as an article I read earlier today noted, we need some sort of day to commemorate people who try to stop wars, try to prevent wars. Because, as the article noted, seldom is a politician left out in the cold for want of support when they decide to support a war. And yes, that made me think of a particular politician, but I'm not going into the political sewer just yet. I've been trying to avoid getting into the political sewer. Sick and tired of it. I feel like I know what's going to happen in November, and there's just not a lot left to talk about. But what of the people who've tried to prevent wars? You know, what of someone like Eugene V. Debs, who certainly was as much of a patriotic American as any general ever was? What of him? What of the people who conscientiously objected to the moral and ethical debacle that was Vietnam? What about people who objected to the clearly immoral and pretty obviously illegal war that we waged, and to a certain extent still wage, against the innocent people of Iraq? Because, see, the people who objected to the waging of the illegal, immoral, and unjust war against the people of Iraq, they turned out to be the people who were right. And the people who wound up sending more than 5,000 of our people serving under the colors to their deaths, they turned out to be horribly, horribly, disastrously wrong, and the degree of their wrongness has not yet even been fully calculated because the wrongness is still propagating in the form of, you know, like ISIS. Tim from L.A. just sent an email, Memorial Day, Japanese-American style. We're having Japanese food on Memorial Day, chicken and pork tonkatsu, rice, tempura, chicken teriyaki, and a lot of beer and wine. I guess we're not celebrating Memorial Day correctly because the true Memorial Day commemoration, the true Memorial Day commemoration is 50% off every sofa and love seat. Come on down to Crazy Eddie's Furniture Emporium for our big Memorial Day sale. That's right. 50% off every crappy sofa and love seat in the store because it's Memorial Day. That's the unofficial opening of summer. 25 whole days. No, 23 whole days. I wish we could get an announcer who could do basic math in his head 23 whole days before the actual beginning of summer. But this is the holiday at the end of May. And so we're putting on a big sale and we're marking everything down to the point that even when we sell it to you marked down, we're still making a big profit because capitalism. Yeah. Still, I must confess, for a guy, and you know, this is not me, you know, hauling out the pity party or anything, but for a guy who hasn't had, solid food for 4 or 5 days, the chicken and pork tonkatsu sounds real tasty, as does the chicken teriyaki, as does the rice and the tempura, and so does all the beer and the wine, also on my abstention list for the day. Damn it. As noted, down south, I presume the tradition still obtains down where I grew up, and the churches are all selling chicken stew and barbecue and hoo-wee. Yeah, none of which I think I'm going to go blow right past omnivore, past vegetarian, past vegan, and I think I'm just going to live on various thin gruels or something. But, you know, maybe I'll shed those 50 pounds I've been talking about. Hey, that'd be cool. It's not pleasant. It is not. But, you know, no Limbaugh Radio, damn it. No Limbaugh Radio. I can assure you that I am not bent, twisted, turnt, or otherwise sideways for this conversation. Took my blood sugar right before the right before the broadcast began, and that turned out to be a whopping 96. Now for me, 96 means that in fairly short order I'll begin to sweat and shake and generally come unglued. But you know, at that point in time, all you can do is crack open something like one of the modern expensive soda pops with like sugar and no high fructose corn syrup in it and get a couple of guzzles and it goes, and it's like a roller coaster. It goes up and it comes down and it goes up and it comes down, because when you rely on sugar for that in its liquid form, it falls real fast. Okay, the food porn has begun. Little Gray in the chat room noting, hell, I wouldn't mind some delicious pho right about now. In fact, maybe I'll go order some cold pho in right now. You do that, Little Gray, and enjoy. Speak well of me when you speak. Enjoy. Love me some pho. But, this is how I prefer things this way. But, yeah, this is a listener-supported radio network. You know that. But I have learned I've learned a hard lesson. When I don't mention it, nothing happens. 96 is normal blood sugar, Lottie, but for me, it means that I begin shaking and falling apart like, you know, a 39 Ford that's held together by nothing but rust molecules. This is a listener-supported operation. We are we try to raise $200 per evening. We fell short on Friday. We've had a couple of subscriptions, and by that I mean a couple of subscriptions roll in. Thank you very kindly to our subscribers. So we've got $315 to raise this evening. You know, 10 at 31, 31 at 10, 1 at 315, 2 at 157.50, and that's as far as that really goes. But that's what we try to raise to keep things going here. And the PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com. And for those of you who prefer the United States Postal Service, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. Right? Right. So hopefully by the time we finish by the time we finish the broadcast, we will raise that $315 and we'll be all good. Where to go for more in Monday? Yeah, the Calliope music seems a little bit over the top, given that it's Memorial Day. How long has it been since we had More and Monday in the People's Republic of China? I don't think we ever have. Well, More and Monday has come to the... congratulations, People's Republic of China. You've made More and Monday. All because of a television commercial, the audio of none of which is in any wise useful in this story. No, and oddly enough, there's nothing inscrutable about this. This is just straight up, plain old-fashioned, garden variety racism. Let's see if I can do it justice. So even though it maintains the facade of being a communist country, it's really nothing more than an authoritarian dictatorship. The People's Republic of China is a capitalist wonderland, so naturally they have to sell soap on TV, as well as, I'm sure, lots of other things. But in this case, we're concerned about soap. Remember the racist Asian commercial from years gone by here in the United States of Merca? Who was the soap for you? Calgon, wasn't it? Well, I guess they're getting back at us. I think here we go. Yeah, this is it. The setup was a stereotypical Chinese laundry somewhere in Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God. Yeah, you remember this.
How do you get shirts so clean, Mr. Lee?
Ancient Chinese secret.
My husband, some hotshot. Here's his ancient Chinese secret, Calgon. Calgon's two water softeners soften wash water so detergents clean better. In hardest water, Calgon helps detergents get laundry up to 30% cleaner. We need more Calgon.
Ancient Chinese secret, huh?
See, yeah, because the white lady, she's clever. She knows Mr. Lee has been busted by his wife. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now that commercial, of course, was racist, because it played upon a stereotype of Chinese people being inscrutable and guarding secrets and being people engaged in the laundry trade, which goes back to a really, really nasty strand of racism that ran through the Western United States in the late 19th and well into the 20th centuries. Ancient Chinese secret, huh? Well, now we have revenge ratcheted up on this Moran Monday to 11. And again, the reason I thought of Calgon, the Calgon ad, is because this too is a soap ad. And it shows a cute Chinese woman over by her washing machine. And a good-looking black guy is standing a little ways away, and it looks like he's been doing some work in the house. We don't know what the relationship between the two people is, but he's got some stuff on, and he's dressed all in white, and he's got, like, some paint on his T-shirt and stuff, and a couple of smears of paint on his on the brown skin of his face. And the Chinese lady gives him the come-hither finger crook, waving him over. And so he comes over, at which point the little Chinese woman, the lovely little Chinese woman, tips him over into the washing machine and stuffs him into the washing machine and then sits on the lid as the washing machine, bounces around a bit, and the camera cuts away to show you a box of the preferred washing detergent of the People's Republic of China, or so they're supposed to think. And then, lo and behold, really, lo and behold, she opens the lid, and rising out of the tub of the washing machine comes a Chinese guy. Yes, yes, the dear leader, dear leader's preferred washing detergent will turn Negroes into good Chinese people. This is something. What was the name of that faux documentary from years gone by? Confederacy USA or CSA or something like that, that featured a whole bunch of products that actually existed in racist, lot more overtly racist America. It's Nanny brand dishwashing liquid, that kind of thing. This would be right at home with that. Only it would need to have never mind. But I thought that was I want to give credit where credit's due. Over on the Chinese version of Twitter called Weibo, one user wrote, "My God, don't Chinese marketing people get any education about race?" A few people, of course, got on to try to defend the ad, and someone else posted, "If you don't understand why it's racist, congratulations, you're a racist." Long way to go as a species. Long way to go. And speaking of species. Ah, it was the Confederate States of America. Thank you, Arthur. Arthur says, "I like that mockumentary." Yeah, oh, it was a dandy. But speaking of the human race as a species, you probably know what comes next. You know what happened in Cincinnati over the weekend. I guess a lot of people go to the zoo. When you've got a zoo, there's a lot of people who go to the zoo, especially on holiday weekends. And one family did. And the little boy, about 4 years old, told his mama, I'm going to get down in the water. I'm going to get down in the water. I'm going to get down in the water. And by God, he did. He slipped away, crawled through some foliage, and went into the gorilla pen. The gorilla, I guess we won't call it a pen, because that makes people think too much about cages, and that makes people, well, no. But it was a zoo, and the little four-year-old kid went down into the area where they keep the gorillas. And, you know, zoos are just animal prisons, let's remember. For instance, we know that because they have really big, high-functioning brains, we know that, like, the orcas that are kept by SeaWorld, they go quite mad swimming around in their tanks day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. And sometimes they go sideways. Well, the little boy got himself down into the gorilla enclosure. And a 17-year-old silverback gorilla went to him and was not... Can you even use the word cruel in talking about animals? Animals act largely on instinct, I guess we still think. They make some conscious decisions, but no, the 17-year-old silverback gorilla did not go over to the little 4-year-old human primate and just stomp the snot out of him. No. In fact, he didn't engage in any violent behavior to him until the human primates up beyond the railing began shrieking and screaming, which scared the poor silverback gorilla half out of its wits. If you had a few hundred human primates screaming and shrieking at you, you'd be afraid too. And for all I know, there's some sort of archival memory system inside the gorilla that remembered that had a passed down memory of that time when the human primates screamed and shrieked at great-grandfather, and the next thing you know, he had an apple in his mouth, and the natives were making food out of him. Or, you know, I mean, chimpanzees are meat-eaters. Gorillas are pretty much leaf strippers, aren't they? They like vegetables. I remember seeing some gorillas very happily munching away on celery. But the upshot of the whole thing is that the Cincinnati Zoo apparently has a bad animal response team, or animal gone bad response team, and they were quite certain that the gorilla was going to wind up killing the little 4-year-old. The goddess of irony, of course, was on the job for the whole thing, because premiering later this month, or later this summer, I think, is the latest, oh my God, incarnation of the Tarzan franchise. You know, the little white English boy who was raised by gorillas. Yeah. Half of me is the Earl of Greystoke. The other half is wild. Right. And at one point in time, the gorilla takes the little kid by the arm and sort of drags him like a rag doll through the moat. But if you watch the video, you kind of go, well, I mean, that's sort of how they drag their own children around. Wait, they're animals, so we don't call them children. We call them their young. Because we wouldn't want to be anthropomorphizing a gorilla. But they're kinfolk, those gorillas are. Well, I mean, you know, different limb of the tree, as it were. But anyway, the Animal Gone Bad response team of the Cincinnati Zoo came in and blew that 17-year-old gorilla away. And then, I guess, went in and rescued the little 4-year-old boy. This has, of course, created by people I know not whom, but it has allegedly created a firestorm of controversy with people saying, why didn't they just shoot it with a tranquilizer dart? And the answer to that is because tranquilizer darts hurt. The gorilla realizes he's been attacked and might do anything because, after all, he's a wild animal. But and so, you know, I come not to praise the nor to bury the Animal Gone Bad response team or the decision to erase the life of the 17-year-old gorilla. But rather to ask on this Moran Monday if maybe. And you know me, I'm no member of PETA by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I don't have a van that I go around euthanizing stray animals with. I'm not PETA, nor am I much in the way of a sympathizer. In fact, I admit to a guilty giggle when I see people wearing the T-shirts that say PETA, and underneath it says "People Eating Tasty Animals." I get that. But for me, it was just, I guess, because of the experience I've had in terms of my own education or miseducation, however anyone cares to look at it. It caused me to think about zoos in general. And wonder if maybe Maybe, we might want to rethink the idea of zoos altogether. They began, I guess it's a French word, as menageries, impoundments of animal curiosities for the pleasure, amusement, and delight of some disgusting royal. They evolved through their circus phase, and, well, you know, Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey is finally, I think they said a couple of months back that they're going to retire their elephants to some happy elephant retirement area. But I'm conflicted. I'm conflicted because on the one hand, insofar as it's human beings who are largely doing the work of exterminating various and sundry animal species from the planet, I understand if other human beings feel a responsibility to try to preserve those species somehow or another. For instance, the 17-year-old gorilla who got offed was there, and it was there was hope that he would be so kind as to, or so cooperative as to allow his genetic genetic urges and instinctual impulses to procreate and bring more little baby gorillas into help bring more little baby gorillas into the world. Mm-hmm. And so I get that. On the other hand, all those shrieking primates who made a bad situation infinitely worse with their shrieking sort of just reminded me that, yeah, we're kinfolk, all right. And given our occasional viciousness, more than occasional, and our ability to just let loose of whatever big brain higher functions we have and sort of give over to the lizard brain portion of our existence, that we're probably closer kin than we like to admit. I'd kind of like to take the pic. I'd take that video of all the shrieking human hairless primates, the hairless apes, the pink and the brown apes, and what, and show it to an anti-evolution type like Ken Ham and go, "Tell me again, we're not kissing cousins, freak."
Yeah, but Jesus can save us.
Oh, wait a minute, I'm talking about Ken Ham. Ah, that's right, mate, but Jesus can save us. Hey, there's no heaven for a gorilla. That was just it for the poor bloke. Oof. Yeah, Texas Betsy tells me folks in Austin are organizing a protest of the Ringling Brothers Circus when they arrive, still using horses and monkeys and so forth. Because they are curiosities. Horses, well, I mean... And you can run into some real ethical conundrums here, like, you know, the really pushy vegans who just want to turn all the cattle loose and all the chickens and they'll just run around living happy little free range chicken lives, you know, until they're eaten by the raptor population. But I guess that's okay. But that footage was disturbing because at least it raised in me the question of who are the morons here, and to the extent that we're still. And maybe, you know, maybe we have zoos to try to preserve species, and we manage to pay for the preservation of the species by virtue of people paying for tickets in to see the zoo. Maybe. But then again, it seems like the people wiping out the species should be the ones paying for the preservation thereof. You know, your Exxon Mobils, your Royal Dutch Shells, your BPs, your great big fracking conglomerate of America, your Keystone, your Keystone Properties Partners, LLC O Canada, that bunch. Hopefully on the mend in the. In the warming north, Ron says zoos exist for the purported education of the public to help connect city folk with the wildlife of the world, especially to protect the endangered species. And oh, let's charge money for the privilege while we're at it. I'm all for safeguarding endangered species, but let's do it in preserves where they aren't bothered by the public. capitalism doesn't have to be applied to every worthy effort. And that's, see, I've been talking about this for a good solid 10 or more minutes, and Ron cut right to the chase. And that's the thing. Let them be what they are. And let's recognize that even in that attempt to ward off extinction, and for instance, gorillas in the wild are very much threatened for a variety of reasons: habitat reduction, hungry locals. Apparently, for instance, bonobos are threatened because bonobo is, to people who live near them, deemed, I guess, real tasty. Yeah. And yes, there are places where you sit down to dinner and they will bring a monkey out to play with you at the dinner table. And then a little later, they bring his head on a plate to you and lift the skull cap, and it's like something straight out of a Hannibal Lecter novel, and everybody dips right in and has some monkey brains, chilled, cooled, uncooked. I don't know. Maybe that's not done so much anymore. Maybe that's because I remember Johnny Carson telling that story, and then the next thing you know, I think it winds up in an Indiana Jones movie, Temple of Doom, was it? Yeah. Yeah. Right. So, that. Now, I don't know where the middle ground lies. You know, there's always, if we want to reject the duality, there's always the possibility that we could stop driving species extinct. Anybody want to take odds on that one? Because I'm going to walk away from here betting against you, and I'm going to have a pocket full of money. Because, again, capitalism. Yeah, that's what I thought. So-called monkey meat, Ron notes, is the major raw source of Ebola and a couple of other nasty diseases. Like I said, hopefully, that is a trend or a tradition that has found its way to its own extinction. But, you know, we got little, innocent, harmless, little blue warblers here in Appalachia. And if there's one, you know, everybody wants to save dolphins and whales and tigers and stuff. And I've long been sort of a jerk by saying that maybe if we could put a coal dust coated dolphin on top of a mountaintop removal site, we might actually make more progress toward ending it. Oh, sure, they were killing and poisoning people, but goddamn, look, it's a dolphin covered in coal dust. We must do something. You get my meaning. But overall, I guess we can just walk away from this Moran Monday nomination saying, sort of pogo-esque, that we have met the enemy and they is us. Uh-oh. From Ron in Raleigh. And by the way, this is trademarked. Bob. As our libertarian friends say, if there's no profit in it, why bother? Everything needs to be owned and used by someone. Well, ain't that the truth? I mean, the earth exists, for us. Now, why the earth existed back when there was no us, well, I guess it existed for the dinosaurs, but they didn't appreciate it. Because they didn't have big primate brains to appreciate it with. Oh, note coming in from a member of the Trinity of Steve. Subject line, Belly of the East. And then there's the one about the Disney and Captain America characters being ripped off by the Wanda theme park that has just opened in Nanchang. 15 of these monster amusement complexes are slated for debut in the next several years. But copyright infringement? Paying the evil capitalist West for using these iconic characters to tap into the wallets of newly minted Chinese consumers? Nah. The stone-faced billionaire responsible for this sort of thing just responded by warning, and I paraphrase, "We will see if a lone tiger can stand against a pack of wolves." Yikes! Well, they wrote the book on business as the equivalent of war. No, really. And vice versa? But see, America, that's what happens when you get in bed with the inscrutable nation factory supplying all your worthless needs at the Walmart store. Is that an ominous gong I hear in the distance? Yeah, it's calling you to the big sale on Action Alley in Walmart. Regards, Steve, in China. Earther pointing out, no, Bob, damn it, we're only going to save the cute animals. And no, Bob, there were no humans before because God was still vacuuming the place. just tidying up a little bit for the new occupants. And the devil was running around putting dinosaur bones in rocks and causing them to fossilize, going, "This is going to fuck with them so bad." Ron and Raleigh, Tarzan, eh? What is the, trivia, what is the name of the actor that first portrayed Tarzan? I was just wondering if there will be any black in this incarnation of the Lord of the Apes. I've seen trailers. Mostly it seems to be about, I don't know. All right, one more before the hour is out. Agnes and I watched this one this morning, courtesy of our buddy Texas T. And, we both had a lengthy conversation about it. Well, we had a length. I don't think we both had. That would imply that we went and had separate conversations. No, we had a lengthy conversation about it. Because on the one hand, you go, okay, this is kind of, but wait, what? What we have here is a 6-year-old child in the family minivan, little boy. Turns out his name's Harry. And before we run the audio, little Harry is okay. Little Harry also has a crying sibling, apparently. Little Harry has begun his educational experience. He lives in a place called Mount Vernon. Don't know what Mount Vernon where. But little Harry had been to school, and he had seen and I think back to the things they showed, because I've got a memory for such things. I think back to the things that they showed us when we were in school. You know, the Rachel Carson's Silent Spring came along in, what, 1962? I'm in first grade by 1969. And you know, the first Earth Day came along a year later. That was the day that my beautiful purple bicycle got stolen. That doesn't matter. Jesus, Bob. But efforts were being made to teach us as children then about, because we'd learned that we were screwing up the planet. Even scientists back then were already beginning to come to conclusions that they really didn't like about what we would call now climate change. But back then, the focus was simply on pollution. And Jesus, took a long time for things to filter down into Northwest Alabama. Disney had always been on the forefront of technological innovation, you know, obviously beginning with innovation. And they'd been at the forefront of stop action too, so they created a little documentary, and it was called Nature's Half Acre. And I'll bet a lot of people saw it. I bet a lot of little kids were herded into auditoriums to watch it. Auditoria? So it, you know, it was bugs and it was a showcase for stop action photography. So you saw butterflies emerging from chrysalises, and you saw flowers growing, blooming, and opening, and you know, there was narration, and it was cute, and it was Disney. And they showed that every blessed year come springtime. 6 solid years, and then never saw it again until I went and looked it up on the magic of the YouTube. But if I look back on why it is that the natural world matters to me, I think that actually was central to it. That little film. And a couple of years later, I grew up playing in some just woods that were across the road and up the hill. Me and my little friends did. And it had trails and gullies and vines and scariest of all, it had an old grave in it up by the highway and the ruins of where a house had once stood and the gone wild orchard that had been there was still there. And we even transplanted some peach trees and brought them down and planted them, but they never grew anything more than, I mean, they wouldn't mature into real peaches. They just stayed little, you know, little hard, fuzzy, green, you know, nothing. And I spent a lot of time wondering about, you know, what life had been there in that house and what that house had been and what that family had been. Because it was an old one, like pre-Civil War. Which to me back then was like saying World War I is to a kid now, 100 years ago. And when a local real estate developer came along and decided that the site of that old house and the site of that grave needed to be an apartment complex, really pissed me off. And I wrote the first poem I ever wrote about the woods being torn down. Hmm. Oh, well. So I have more than a little bit of sympathy for little Harry here. Little Harry is very, very, very upset. He's okay. Don't worry. He's okay. But this is a 6-year-old who I wonder if he's had his childhood taken away. And I wonder what it even means to say he's had his childhood taken away. There's plenty of places still on this planet where there's no such thing as childhood. The minute young child that you can walk, you are going to contribute to the family being able to continue to eat and survive, because if you don't, the family won't. And there's plenty, and there's even plenty of places in the United States, I suppose, where that still obtains. Lots of photos show up on my Facebook feed from time to time of black-faced little children, little boys, who worked in the coal mines in Appalachia for some capitalist billionaire. And you know what? They died just like grown men at places like Mananga in 1907. They died just like grown men when the mine blew up. And so I don't even know what it means when I say, has this little boy had his childhood stolen from him? Yep, wait, stop. No, that's not it. Wow, where the hell is that coming from? Oh, I know where that's coming from. All better now. So, behold, little Harry, who's very upset about his planet.
The planet is going to be wrecked. People are just being rude to it. They throw trash on the ground. They cut down trees. They make forests into places, into roads. And they need to think about what they are doing, and what they are doing to the planet, what they are doing to animals. They are being so bad. I could just call them dumb people. Or maybe even a bad word, the S word.
You got that? Little Harry is so mad he's going to call the people who are doing all this a bad word. He's going to call them the S word. And grown-ups, before you think that the S word means one of those words that you can't say on censored over-the-air broadcasting in the United States. No, he's still a little kid. The bad S word he's thinking about is stupid. Stupid. Because that's a very bad word he's been taught there in the early stages of his education.
I'm going to try to fight them off when I'm a grown-up. I hate them.
Well, maybe you could make posters. Would that be a good idea? And then you wouldn't have to fight anybody? Yeah.
We'll do that and fight. I'm just going to yell at them. Actually, no, I'm not going to yell at them. I have a better idea. Yell in their ear. I hate them.
He's going to yell in their ear. And this wasn't something that suddenly happened to little Harry. Because Harry loves to go to the little park in his neighborhood. And when he goes to his little park in his neighborhood, he carries a whistle. And if he sees someone throw trash on the ground or something, he blows his whistle at them and tells them they ought not do that. For Halloween this past, he dressed up as a park ranger because that is what Harry will tell everybody that he wants to be. Harry wants to be a park ranger. Your heart breaking yet? Mine damn sure did. But we're not quite done yet. Let's finish up.
And I just don't want animals to die. I wish I was an adult right now.
Why do you wish you were an adult, honey?
I just want to do my job right now.
You don't have to be an adult. What can you do as a kid to help them?
You go with me, and we go to Little Mountain, and we try to stop people. And I can bring my whistle. Oh my gosh. Baby animals. Oh my gosh. They eat the garbage. And I hate those people who make them do that.
Yeah, Harry. I get it. What do you think of that? Mom sounds like she's doing a pretty credible job. She tries to get him to reason and think through the problem. And like I said, Harry's okay. Harry's going to be okay. Because Harry's going to be on the Ellen show. Because this video, this particular video, has had some several millions of views. Been seen all over the world, wherever Facebook goes. And well, I worry about the little guy. I mean, he's okay, but I worry about the little guy. Of course, through the miracle of modern communications, this video is going to follow little Harry for the rest of his days. Yeah, maybe someday he'll be a hedge fund manager on Wall Street, and he can look back from his billionaire perch in some corner office near Wall Street, on Wall Street. And he can laugh about when he was a naive youngster who cared about the little animals. But in a way, you know what scares me even more than that? The idea that some big green will get hold of little Harry. Sierra Club or some such. And and in so doing, you know, that maybe the Sierra Club will send out a fundraising email. Help little Harry stop crying. Send $15 now, and we'll send you a photograph of Harry smiling as he walks through the park. Right? But the thing is, while he is translating this through an obviously very, very bright 6-year-old's comprehension, mostly he's right. They are wrecking the planet. But let's not be so easy on ourselves. We are wrecking the planet. Ron in Raleigh says simply, "Wow, I'm tearing up. That little kid has more intelligence and caring than T-Rump will ever have." Of course he does. T-Rump is a megalomaniacal sociopath. There's something wrong with his wiring such that he's incapable of feeling even an iota of what little Harry feels. And you know what? If you showed it to him, you know the response you'd get from a T-rump on this, don't you? Sure. That he's been somehow abused by a bunch of by liberal parents. And believe me, I went down the thread on this thing, and that was right there. You know, what's wrong with these parents that they would do that to that child? Well, apparently they didn't. What's that term the Holy Mother Church came up with for people who behaved like Christians before Christ came along? You know, Socrates, Aristotle. Homo Christianicus Naturaliter, the naturally Christian man. Yeah, something like that. I thought of Buddhism when I saw Harry for the first time there in that video. I thought that, you know, somebody like the Dalai Lama would see little Harry and go, somebody get this little fella to a monastery right quick, and because I think we've got a little Buddha on our hands. But, of course, this being Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, under God, in the universe. People saw little Harry and saw dollar signs. He's gonna be on the for-profit TV. Yay. And I'm sure he will be absolutely charming. The marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas Stan writes and says, Harry is reminding me of that song, Vincent, by Don McLean. You know, the one that goes, Starry, Starry Night. Yeah, that one. Little Harry will need to be nurtured very carefully. Because little Harry has morals. Little Harry has more ethics in his little finger than the CEO of ExxonMobil has in his entire being and the entirety of his family tree. Little guy. Wouldn't it be nice if we all worked to make a planet that was fit for Harry to live on? I remember memorizing a poem when I was a little kid that began, I have to live with myself, and so I want to be fit for myself to know. Well, little Harry is fit to know himself. And like I said, the shame of it all is that he's largely right. We are wrecking the planet. We're not wrecking the planet as in the planet won't be here. There'll be just, you know, that it'll just be the another asteroid belt. You know, there's one between us and Mars, and there's one between, and we'll just be the, and it'll just be two asteroids belts between Venus and Mars, no. But the ability of humans to appreciate and, you know, live on this little pale blue dot. Yep, sorry, Steve in New York. I did forget the amen. Amen. How do you like that? Echo and reverb. And that's true. In the chat room, Lottie notes, little Harry hasn't been indoctrinated by capitalism yet. maybe somehow he won't be. So that's the first hour of the program. This here Moran Monday. Oh, don't worry, we have more Morans. Lots and lots of Morans. Lots of Morans. Lots and lots of Morans. We also have telephone connections. And that means that you can involve yourself in the program. You can engage in the conversation. You know the number, area code 304-663-4676. Yeah, that's it. That's it, Anatole. You'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And, yes, Tim, I got your Moran. And we will most likely get to it. You get your Moran. So, yeah, we'll take a break. 304-663-4676 is the stress line named for the inimitable, irrepressible Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. That's 304-663-HORN, H-O-R-N. The other line, 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178. And, of course, from anywhere on the planet, if you wish to jump in, via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. And that'll get you that'll get you right into the program. If you'd like to be a part of the conversation and you've never sent me a Skype request, and you want to do it that way, just send me a contact request on Skype and say something like, you know, Horn listener. Okie doke. Okay. So I think that pretty much takes care of everything. You know, we started the program with a $315 fundraising goal. And we still have a $315 fundraising goal. So I'll just leave it at that. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
a peaceful oasis. You got it, you got it. This was a Pizza Hut, now it's all covered with daisies. You got it, you got it. I miss the honky tonks, Dairy Queens, and 7-Elevens. You got it, you got it. And as things fell apart, nobody paid much attention.
And, of course, the Talking Heads and Nothing But Flowers. One of my favorite of their songs. I play it from time to time. This is the horn for Moran Monday, the 30th day of May, 7:17 p.m. in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, 30th day of May, 2016. I have been corrected. I said earlier that Veterans Day is for all veterans and Memorial Day is for those who died in wars. And Jim writes to correct me. No, today recognizes all vets, living or dead, such words of the President National Command, and is an effort to remember vets, living or dead. Obviously, you did not get the memo. Why should you? I guess you are not able to enjoy grilling today. I guess the loss of 50 pounds would not hurt you. Thank you for your sacrifice, Jim. That's not Jim in Louisiana, Stan. Just so we'll be clear, because we've got multiple Jims. There's that. And it will gratify Jim to know that I read that on the air. Thank you very kindly to Kevin. Kevin in Connecticut. For helping with fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly indeed. We have now crossed the $300 threshold. We got $290 to raise in the remainder of the program so as not to go into tomorrow with a great big hole to shovel out at the end of May. $290 to go, and, you know, one at 29, 29 at 10, you know, the drill. Like I said, Tim from L.A. sent a Moran along. And this is a doozy. This is the time of year when, you know, school lets out, and a lot of high schools try to get their yearbooks out this time of year so people can, you know, like autograph, sign the yearbook, yada yada yada. And so it was in the Morongo Unified School District. Mm-hmm. This being reported by KESQ.com. Some parents are kind of pissed off And I think rightfully so. You know, a yearbook is a high school yearbook is a compendium, a time capsule of a very special time. You know, I think I've still got all four of my high school yearbooks. This particular yearbook has some interesting photos in it. And, of course, it was just clowning around, right?
Yeah.
There's a photo in the yearbook in the section called Senior Superlatives, you know, best dressed, most likely to be a Silicon Valley tech billionaire who sues journalism outfits that he doesn't like, that kind of thing. In the Senior Superlatives section of the Morongo Unified School District. Thank you, Goddess of Irony. Thank you. There's a photo titled Teacher's Nightmare. And it shows a young man who's holding a gun aimed at a book. And then there's a picture of a young woman holding a knife over a different book. Then there's a third photo that shows a pair of students who are lighting something that looks like a bomb. Superintendent of the Morongo Unified School District, Tom Baumgarten, did admit that the first time he saw the photos, it gave him pause for some concern. Superintendent Tom Baumgarten said, "In today's world, there may be many interpretations of a picture, but anything that has a gun or a knife portrayed in a school setting can cause people concerns. There were some parents that were upset, and there were some parents that understood that these were chosen by the seniors on the yearbook advisory group. They asked folks to participate, and they brought props in for their pictures." Because, see, here's the interesting part. Had that been a photograph that was taken, say, at home by a student and innocently posted to their Facebook page, that kid would probably be facing felony charges right now of conspiracy to commit domestic terrorism. See, here's the problem. Beth Gonzalez is a young woman in one of the photographs. And when interviewed about it, she told CBS Local 2 and News Channel 3's Kelly Moody. She said it wasn't her idea. And it was none of the other students' idea to use a knife, a gun, and a bomb as a prop in a yearbook photo. It wasn't even her idea or any of the other students to pose for those photos. Instead, it was the idea of the teacher who was in charge of the yearbook production. Beth Gonzalez says, how am I going to be looked at in the future? Am I going to be that girl with the knife in the picture? Young Beth Gonzalez is hoping to join the Navy. And she says she's worried about what impact that photo might have on her hopes. She said there were even some comments on there saying stuff about ISIS, and that's what the photo represents. I mean, how is the military going to accept me if I represent ISIS? There's a tradition in the Gonzalez household, or in the Gonzalez extended family, of military service, and she wants to continue it. Her mama, Corinna Gonzalez, says, I've placed a call to the district. I've placed a call to the school. You think I've received any call back? No. They haven't completely given up hope, however. They want an apology from the school and the district. And they want the teacher to step forward and say, yeah, it was my idea. The props were my idea. The photos were my idea. Posing the students that way was my idea. On the other hand, moron go independent school district superintendent Tom Baumgarten says, if the parents want a refund for their yearbook, they will be paid in full. But the school doesn't intend to reprint or recall them. And I guess, it would probably be too much to recall them. And reprinting them would just be prohibitively expensive. So, under those circumstances, you would think that maybe an apology would be kind of easy. But no. Oh, by the way, the young man with a gun, yeah, black kid. How does that, in what you, it's a high school. In what universe does that make sense? Who's the clever educator who says, yeah, okay, yeah, you hold the gun and click. Oh no, this is going to be hilarious. Go figure. Really. Well, you know, mistakes were made. You'll just have that, I guess. Oh, well, more on Monday. These things are supposed to be there. By the way, the Moron Go Unified School District is in California, before you make the mistake of thinking that maybe it's Texas or something. Somewhere down there was a, let me see here, because, the best part of it is the non-apology apology at the end. We have taught, Superintendent Tom Baumgarten said, we have talked to the advisor. There was no malicious intent by the advisor, the students, the administration, or the district to portray anybody in a negative manner. And then this, we apologize if it did. Thereby putting the burden on whoever feels aggrieved. Otherwise known as a non-apology apology. Now, see, when you're doing that, Superintendent Baumgarten, you put a period after apologize and leave out the if it did part. And of course, the old saw from the first day of 1L torts. All liability is based upon fault, not intent. Going all the way back to an oldie, merry oldie England case, in which one of the king's soldiers lopped off the arm of the other king's soldier while they were practicing soldiering, and they brought before the court of king's bench and all the oh yay pageantry kind of stuff. And the holding was, and the guy said, listen, I didn't mean to lop his arm off. And the ruling came down that what he intended to do was not at issue, what he had done was, and that all liability would proceed from fault and not from intent. Mm-hmm. But, of course, yeah, the moron go... Independent Unified School District, whatever. And, well, they're worried about intent. Good on you. Tim notes, no offense to the Morongo Native American tribe in any fashion, but Yucca Valley High School of the Morongo Unified School District are a bunch of morons. Thus the nomination. Hashtag Moran. Steve notes, when I was a kid, we all thought kids who wanted guns in their high school photos to be just weird. No teacher ever suggested something like this. Tim asks, so given that we've got the state of Jefferson and now Moron Go Unified School District, will we be christened California Stan? No. You're a long way from becoming a Stan state. I mean, you've got your fair share of good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals, and right-wingers, and booger-eaters, and birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, libertarians, and repig-lickens generally. But you're a big enough state that you've pretty much still got them fairly diluted. So I'm not going to hang a stan on California for a while. No, I don't think so. Ron, Ron in the warming north, helping the program along. Hey, can we start a pissing contest? I don't want to offend Jim, not the one from Louisiana, but Memorial Day is for those who died as a result of military service, and Veterans Day is for those who served. That was always my understanding, but Jim apparently has a direct line to. President National Command. So I guess the pissing contest is on. Okay, we haven't had a media moran. And file this under amusing ourselves to death. I guess there are people out there for whom something like this matters. Hell, it matters to me. There's a hot dog involved. I had no idea. None whatsoever. I mean, I spent my weekend reading about various and sundry disasters and malfeasances going on all over the globe, but apparently, there's a newspaper in Israel that is saying that the justice ministry or some prosecutors. It says that he's got enough information to go after psychopath Bibi Netanyahu's wife for financial shenanigans, and he said, and Bibi said no, and yeah, okay. All kinds of stuff out there. There's a lot going on down here. I mean, you've got a mercury poisoning problem in Peru. Peru has declared a state of emergency in its little corner of Amazonia. Maybe more on that after we get done with the important stuff, because there is a there's a brush fire in the culture wars, and it was lit by all people. And well, I mean, when you know what I mean when I say people, right? I mean,
corporations are people, my friend. Of course they are. Human beings, my friend.
The folks at Merriam-Webster, the I guess you would call them the American keepers of the dictionary. The Oxford Dons are in charge of English generally. They sent out a tweet of a link from an article they published, because Merriam-Webster is in charge of the language, and they published to chew on 10 kinds of sandwiches. Yes, the hot dog is one of them. A sandwich, definition, two or more slices of bread or a split roll having a filling in between. Definition two, one slice of bread covered with food. Well, it was on then. Oh, hell yes. The foodies went into orbit. And the question is a hot dog a sandwich? And I didn't know this was the thing. I didn't know it, but it's apparently a roiling, rousing debate out there whether a hot dog is a sandwich. I look at it and go, well, of course. And there's probably some zealot out there, God damn it, no, it's not. You know, because we'll get passionate about this stuff. What? Mercury poisoning in Peru's corner of Amazonia. What'd they say about a hot dog? It's a vegetable. So there was, you know, there were some snarky tweets. I trusted you. Blocked. I'm not kidding. This is terrorism. You've gone too far. How dare you? It's Oxford Dictionary for me from now on. You're a monster. Don't disrespect hot dogs like that. I think Merriam-Webster's been hacked. This is why I only use the Oxford Dictionary. A hot dog is just a piece of meat, so how can that be a sandwich? Blasphemy. Your butt is a sandwich. So you get it. Right. I said this was a Media Morin nomination, didn't I? Soylent Green is hot dogs! Yeah. you almost have to know where this is going out. You have to know where this is, how this is going to be handled. You know, in the delicate, tender mercies of the for-profit media, who are going to jump on this? Nah, you already know. It's Moran Monday. Fox! And their hip happening morning show. So, armed with the knowledge that Merriam-Webster now says that a hot dog is a sandwich, and who gives up, really? They sent intrepid reporter Morris, Clayton Morris, out to the mean streets of New York to take the pulse of Gotham about hot dogs. No, really.
Now, one of these things is not like the other. It sounds like a song, right? Well, the controversy over whether or not a hot dog is classified as a sandwich reignited this Memorial Day weekend. Merriam-Webster getting grilled over this tweet saying, "Have a great Memorial Day weekend. The hot dog is a sandwich." They point to the definition of a sandwich, which is two or more slices of bread or a split roll having a filling in between. Well, many people are outraged, including one person who even calls this terrorism, according to a tweet. Oh, come on.
You know, it sounds like overstatement, but when you attack a hot dog, you're not just deriding a cylindrical meat product. You're attacking America.
The fabric of the United
States. Oh, for sake. That high-pitched, prepubescent voice you just heard there is none other than Tucker Carlson, who somehow thinks he's being cute. Multi-millionaire broadcasting. The beating heart of the Fourth Estate.
That's exactly right. Clay Morris is outside on 6th Avenue with a hot dog vendor. We don't have him now. We've got some technical problems, but we're never going to go to Clayton. He is with a weenie man right now. There he is.
That's right. Well, we're out here trying to check the pulse of the hot dog.
I told you there would be pulse checking, didn't I? I didn't even know he was going to say pulse. I just speak for-profit media bullshit that well. I don't speak it natively, but it's, you just know where they're going to go. Now, here's the problem with impromptu broadcasting. He's standing across the street from a hot dog stand. He has apparently not gone up to see if it would be okay with the hot dog vendor for him to put him on live national television. Because he's from Fox, goddammit. And that means that he could just barge into anybody, stick a microphone in, because the Fourth Estate, First Amendment. If not that, Second Amendment. Fuck you.
The hot dog controversy across the country this morning with a hot dog vendor. Excuse me, sir, you handle a lot of
Wait a minute. Did he just say the hot dog controversy across the country this morning? If we've got a hot dog controversy in this country, things are worse than I thought. Meanwhile, Steve in that self-same New York City says, "And who says journalism is dead?" I think you just did, Steve. You know, only because it is. So here he is. He's going to walk up to a dirty water dog vendor. And I say that lovingly because that's, it's what... And they're yummy. on the mean streets of Gotham.
Hot dogs, right?
No,
you don't. There's a controversy this morning about whether or not a hot dog.
So the guy doesn't want to talk to him. You sell hot dogs, right? No. So dipshit just stands there and keeps talking. Like he thinks he's that Waters creep who works for Bill O'Reilly and he's finally on the big scoop. It's like maybe this poor dude who moves hot dogs for a living is actually secret. I mean, this is his big moment.
Dog is a sandwich. Would you say it's a sandwich, or would you say it's something entirely different?
I don't have it.
Really doesn't have an opinion about it. It's been a rough morning out here on New York City in Times Square. Let's see if we can.
Because nobody wants to talk to Fox in Times Square in New York City. Because they're just, I mean, a big city, New York. Big, wonderful, but hustling, bustling beauty of a city. But it's got way too many normal, decent human beings in it who know exactly who and what Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is. Yeah, but Clayton Morris is having a tough go of it.
I don't know if you guys...
In Times Square. It's what the MTS have seen.
Did you tell him you were the a tax authority, Clayton?
I'm going to ask this guy. You know, we have a jaywalking problem here in the city, too.
I mean, Jesus, he's wandering around Times Square, and it's like a scene from The Day After or something. Well, that's dated. The asteroid already, I mean, it's nobody there.
Maybe they're all out in the Hamptons with the Kissingers.
You know, if it wasn't Fox, you'd feel bad for this poor schlub. You'd think he was a poor schlub. Instead, I think he's just a schmuck.
It would have been iconic thing to do, though, when you do that Big Apple.
And we should be clear, in New York City, it's an all...
I mean, people walking past him, and he's kind of, like, sticking the microphone, and they keep walking like he's a Jehovah's Witness or Hare Krishna or something.
At least if I die,
so there's some skittishness.
I'm going to go down with one of the hardest-hitting stories of my career. Let's see if I can ask this gentleman. This guy just had some Dunkin' Donuts, so he's a fan of fast food. Let me ask this guy. I have a question about hot dogs. It's Memorial Day weekend.
Sure.
Webster's just tweeted out yesterday that a hot dog is a sandwich. Where do you come down on this debate? Hot dog a sandwich?
I'm going to say definitely not. Unless it's two flat pieces of bread, can't be a sandwich.
Can't be
a...
Okay, there you go. So he...
Well, we have our answer. White guy in a red polo shirt. The only man in Times Square willing to talk to the correspondent from Fox, because he's got, you know, he's got the little hoosis on his microphone that says Fox News, so everybody knows that he's just, you know, he's the broadcast equivalent of the walking plague. Go figure. How much? And I don't know. I really don't. How much money is it per minute for Fox to broadcast anything? Exactly. Labor man in the chat room noting, Bob, they know he's a jagoff. Yes, he is. Because he is. Because Fox. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out a few minutes ago, may I remind you that your average run-of-the-mill hot dog has enough sawdust filler where, by God, it can qualify as a vegetable. True story! The salary, even though they're the Saturday crew and they're less paid, but, you know, that's the one thing. They pay well at Fox. They're the Saturday crew. They're on the and Clayton Morris's job is to wander around and do stupid shit. Why he can't just go and get loaded and you know, talk to the microphone? I don't know. It couldn't be any worse. I mean, can you imagine him after he's ripping the headphones, the earbuds out, and throwing down the microphone? God! I went to J school for this? But if you take in the salaries and God knows the small army of people working production and the technical aspect and the sound guy and the camera. I mean, there's a cameraman with him. It's a two-man team. It's not like he's got the old Sony on his shoulder. Which raises another question. Are those folks at Fox, are they union? I don't know. I only ask, for instance, because, people like Flush Flemball, the oxymoron, he rails against labor, rails against unions. But, you know, that dumb bastard's a member of AFTRA. He's a union guy. Mm-hmm. So I'm told. Kind of has to be. But, just a little bit more of this before I completely lose my mind.
He's defying Webster's. What do you think about that? Two flat pieces of bread, that makes it a sandwich.
And that makes that guy a moron because the bread doesn't have to be flat. I mean, are you telling me they don't sell sandwiches at Subway? Oh, no, those are subs. The language is dying. Meanwhile, Ron in Raleigh says, hell, give me the sawdust any day over the USDA's allowance for insect parts and rodent hair in a hot dog. Mighty tasty. Mighty tasty. It does get worse, though. It gets worse, more pathetic, you know, however you want to define it. I mean, Jesus Christ. Ted Turner. Ted, can I call you Ted? Did you know what you were inventing when you did you really, and you can ask this really of any inventor. I mean, did Alfred Nobel know what he was inventing when he invented dynamite? Well, yeah, he did. He said it was going to be a weapon so terrible that humans would never dare to use it on each other. Sucker! Or that's the apocryphal story. Thomas Edison was so terrified. Well, no, he wasn't terrified. He was trying to market something. He was trying to get his direct current, make his direct current electrical theory and products the industry standard, as opposed to alternating current, and was so dedicated to the proposition that he electrocuted an elephant with AC in order to prove how dangerous it was. But I think about Ted Turner when he invented the 24-hour news cycle and said there was going to be a channel. He was going to start a channel, a broadcast channel, on cable, and it was going to be a news network, and he was going to call it exactly that, Cable News Network. And it was going to be nothing but news, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and people looked at him and said, well, yeah, Ted's genius and everything, but every now and then, he goes a little funny, you know, funny in the head, funny. And this would be one of those times. I mean, this will be, oh my God. You wonder if Ted Turner saw this coming. The absolute putrefaction of broadcast. I mean, granted, CNN had, and maybe still has, for all I know, a reporter named Jeannie Mose, and Jeannie's job used to be wandering around finding interesting and unique stories on the mean streets of Gotham, and she was kind of funny. She had an eye and ear for it. This Clayton Morris guy, flatter than piss on a plate. But he also knows that there's time that has to be slaughtered to get to the next ad break. And so this goes on interminably as he proves that he does not know the first law of holes.
Well, what if there's like some sort of vegan, like what Anna eats, you know, one of those like vegan burgers in the middle? It's not really meat. It's like some sort of fake lettuce product.
If it's vegan, it can't be a hot dog at all. Sorry.
No, but peanut butter and jelly is a sandwich. That's not meat. Come on, Clayton.
What we have here is a failure to think outside the loaf.
Outside the bun.
Outside the bun.
Outside the bun.
Wait, exactly. I think somebody said that once.
Hey, excuse me, sir. Can I ask you a quick question?
Nope.
Yeah, a little coffee and cigarette to kickstart your morning.
You're getting a little...
Hey, anybody have a... I have a hot dog question. Anybody want to answer me a hot dog?
Jesus, he's got his hand in the air. I mean, this is turning into a Warner Brothers cartoon, the one where Bugs Bunny is standing in the middle of the animal stampede going, where's everybody going? Ron, run for your life. It's the Tasmanian devil. Ron, run for your life. It's the jackass from Fox News. Let me just wrap this up. It's gotten more time than it ever deserved. Yeah, Lottie, Sparky just posted in the chat room. Look, son, an idiot. So he wanders around like Odysseus trying to get back to Ithaca. No, not at all like that. I mean, Odysseus was smart. And he wanders around and eventually he finally finds a sucker. And he wants to, because he's still seething inside with what the hot dog vendor had done to him earlier. And he tries to get the guy to go up and buy a hot dog so he can stick the camera back in his face. And then, at the very end, he goes back and says, he goes back to the same guy who turned him down and says, Morley Safer, you died just in time. Can we get this guy a hot dog? Will you serve me now? The vendor's closing now. And then this guy starts reaching into the guy's cart and serving himself. Where is that vaunted NYPD when you need him? I mean, he works for Fox. You don't know where his hands have been. The hot dog cart probably has to be completely detoxed now. God almighty. But Oh well, let's take a break. You want a 3-hour Memorial Day filibobster? Is that what you're telling me? The lines are open. This is the horn. We got $290 to raise to finish off the night. Okay. And you know me. I'm Bob Kincaid, and I want a hot dog. Three minutes past the hour. More in Monday, the 30th day of May, also Memorial Day, 2016. This is the Horn, and let's run over to the stress line, and Connecticut. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Yeah.
Hello. Hold on a second. Hey, Bob, you there?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Okay, I took it off my speakerphone. That's all.
Oh, that helps.
This is Kevin. How are you doing today?
Good, Kevin. How about you?
All right. Hey, I just wanted to say one thing tonight, and I'll jump off. But I'm so happy Bernie Sanders asked our Democrat name only Governor Malloy to get off the committee, or Democratic National Convention Committee, which I was happy about, because the guy is not, I don't know what he is. He's a corporate Republican, I guess. I don't know of anything he's done yet that would you say you know, he hates public ed. He destroyed public ed. He's destroyed higher ed at the state level. And I don't want to go into details, but he merged community colleges with the state universities, which was never done even by Republican governors in our state. So then there's been all kinds of corruption at this new Regents set level that he set up, all kinds of corruption. Payouts, corruption, guys resigning amid corruption. And then, you know, he loved the unions when he needed their votes, then had no problem destroying state workers and telling unions they needed.
But I mean, isn't that the story of the centrist Democratic Party for the last God knows how many years? You court the unions, you tell them you love them, and then you leave them high and dry because you've assumed all along that unions have nowhere to go but the Democratic Party?
Yeah, well, you know what? Yeah, you're right. You know, and that's what Chris Hedges always talks about with the Democratic Party. You know, they speak in a language of civil rights and workers' rights, but then when it all boils down to it, they're nowhere to be found. I mean, you think the Democratic Party will stand up more against these voting rights measures? That, you know, they do it to a point. I tell you, they might be better on that than they are on other things, but they're still not effective enough. And the union thing, though, the Democratic Party left unions a long time ago, except for maybe professional unions. They've been more, I think, more in their corner, but not even now. In many ways, they're not. I know Jerry Brown, you know, he's done some damage in California as a governor there. I can't follow every governor in the country, but they speak in the language of all this stuff, the rhetoric, but then, did I read that four of Hillary Clinton, four to six people on the, somewhere, four to six people, main people for Hillary Clinton are Wall Street types of people. Is that correct? Do you know?
You mean like...
I read something like that over the weekend. I'm unclear about it.
You mean in her inner circle?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I think you're correct. And then, of course, there's the head honcho, John Podesta, who is the ultimate, you know, the ultimate Washington insider, the ultimate power broker, you know, with a list of...
Oh, you know what, though? As far as John Podesta goes, I don't mind him so much. I mean, I know he's a Hillary supporter, but he's not... I can handle him compared to some other people that are with her.
Well, no, I mean, he's done some good things, you know, setting up the Center for American Progress and you know, Think Progress does good work in terms of putting out information on a daily basis for folks to get their heads around. And, you know, in a response to it was supposed to be a response to the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, and all those, you know, all right. Those cesspools.
Well, you know, it's funny, though, because Bill Press is pro-Bernie, and he's doesn't he do a show from there, doesn't he, or something, Bill Press? He's really friendly with those.
Well, I mean, I know he broadcasts out of D.C.
Yeah, I know he's friendly with those people, but yet he's pro-Bernie, you know. And I just wanted to mention that, Bob. It's like, you know, this Malloy, he he wants to be pro-business, but he's got those people mad at him. How more incompetent can you be? I mean, he's pretty much alienated even the people that, you know, he's trying to be, you know, he's a hedge fund manager governor. I don't know, the guy, I was very happy this weekend when I read that. Of course, the Hartford Current had a big thing. Oh, Bernie didn't get his way. Well, you know, I don't know if not getting your complete way, you're exposing things, though. You know, you might not get your way, but at least you're exposing people that need to be exposed. To me, that's good enough sometimes. You know, even if Bernie doesn't get his way with getting Malloy and Barney Frank off the thing, you know?
Well, and Barney Frank in particular is he did some arguably progressive things. The question is, should some in a primary process, okay? And I think this is... it may take me a minute to work through this, Kevin, but in a typical primary process where you don't have an incumbent president running for the nomination, like, say, 2012, the Democratic Party is supposed to be avowedly neutral until after the primary, and then you support the nominee.
Agree with you.
And what you've got instead is an extraordinarily unusual situation, at least by my lights, in which everybody just assumed, because, you know, there was, you know, there was a There was a Run Bernie Run movement that was put forward by Progressive Democrats of America, I believe, encouraging him to run, trying to push him toward it. But he entered the race relatively. It's hard to say late because God, it seems like this campaign has gone on forever because it has. But by the time he did enter, everyone Hillary's operation is sound and extremely competent when it comes to working, when it comes to working the bureaucracy of campaigning. Okay, so they had everybody lined up, and they had everybody committed. I mean, they went out to all the superdelegates and said, "Ah, you're going to be for Hillary, aren't you?" "Oh God, yeah, I'm for Hillary." And so that puts people, and Bernie wasn't in the race when they did that.
And that's what's
created this mess, Kevin, as far as I can tell.
You would think the Democratic Party would want to be, I'm being kind of silly here, Democratic, and they're, I get away from it, then I go back to it, like I told you before, because my brain can't take it all the time, but I need some sanity somewhere, and I don't know if, I just wanted to mention that to you overall, that, I don't want to take, I'm not big on calling talk shows anymore, but I like your talk show, but.
Well, but you know what, if you feel comfortable enough to call this program, that is a high honor to me and to this community.
Yeah, I used to like calling talk shows, but then I got turned off by them, now, so you're one of the few I listen to now, but something about talk shows turned me off, but you're not really a talk show and that's why I like your show and I listen to it because it's real, it's not phony. A lot of these shows are, and then you get like 10 minutes, but even though you give people a liberal amount of time to talk, I still don't like to talk too long. So I'll let you go, hope you had a nice day today and everything.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's very kind of you, and I hope you did as well.
All the callers, all listeners, I say hi to you, too, and hope you have a good night. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Good to hear from you.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye. Bye now. Kevin calling from Connecticut. And that's high praise indeed. I don't think of you as a talk show. That means that the model, such as it is succeeding. Conversation radio really is something. And to the to the gravamen of Kevin's observation, unseemly that the Democratic National Committee just automatically assumed the inevitability of Hillary Clinton and didn't wait for the process to pan out. But as was observed by Anatole and Lottie in the chat room, Hillary's been running for president in 2016 since her campaign ended in 2008. And that's not a slam. That's not a slur. That's not Hillary bashing. It just is what it is. And that's how her organizational, her campaign bureaucracy people are great. I mean, they created this sense of an inevitable juggernaut. And then, there you go. She went out on the campaign trail, and it's like all of that good work was for naught. Because she's a terrible campaigner. And she's not a particularly good candidate. At least in my humble opinion. And there's Jim in Louisiana Stan. What's happening, Jim? Oh, Jim. Oh, wrong button. Sorry. There's Jim.
You here?
Yeah, you're there and I'm here. I can't drive the bus.
Okay.
I put my foot on the brake when I want to go, and I stomp on the gas when I want to stop.
I still think you're doing one hell of a job, but let me throw this beer away. I think that I'm a totally Bernie guy, and I dig where you don't want to get into that, but I think what's and what's going on with the Democratic, well, the Democratic Party as it was, it is, I think they had it in for Hillary being the nominee from the get-go.
That's what it's her turn means.
Oh, dude, that pissed me off so much when she, even before Bernie was running, and she came out with that stupid statement, I was thinking, God damn, what a stupid statement to make. You know, it's my turn. Without even looking over all the questionable things she's done. And then the other thing is what came out over this weekend, that she might be indicted. Did you hear that?
Oh, yeah.
I know it was a feeling.
You hear that every 15 minutes, depending on where you're looking. I still give that no credence whatsoever, Jim.
Okay. Well, I mean, I was just getting hopeful.
I mean, Janet Lynch's Justice Department is going to take Hillary Clinton in front of a grand jury. I don't mean physically, but all of that stuff. They're going because right now, if they impaneled the grand jury right now, that grand jury would not come out with anything until after November, or else it would be under pressure to come out with something before the convention and go, nope, we clear her at all. I mean, I don't like to speak in absolutes, but it ain't going to happen, Jim.
I hear you. I feel hopeful.
There's stuff in there. Setting up a private email server was, and I want to use a technical term here within the world of computer, dumb. It was just dumb. I mean, your Secretary of State, you've got the best IT guys, at least theoretically, that money can buy. IT people, I'm sorry. And right, so you're going to set up a server and you're just going to hire somebody from Servers Is Us to take care of the server in your home. Only the server in your home is going to wind up being in a bathroom closet in Denver.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that, I'm getting, through dealing with you and Malloy, I'm getting a little bit more technical every day. But I would know if
I was because, me and Malloy, computer geniuses.
That's it, man. But the thing is, I know that every, I'm going to steal Sting, in the police, every move you make, blah, 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 I'll be watching you. So they can track back everything you do on the computer. And then that came out also 6 months, a year ago, whatever, with the big opening, or maybe the thing had been open. About how, this phone call we're making right now. If they want to go back to this phone call, they got it. It's no big deal.
Loretta Lynch, by the way. Loretta Lynch, not Janet. I don't know where I got Janet. Okay. Damn it, Janet.
Janet Jackson, or maybe Janet.
Yeah, I got nothing, but it's Loretta Lynch. God almighty. I think my blood sugar must be about 12 now.
Well, maybe you're having a rocky
heart. Oh, Janet Reno. Janet Reno. There we go. Okay. Yeah.
but it's just, you know, the whole Hillary thing, and here we go into politics. It's Memorial Day, and it's kind of a day off of politics, and but man, I'm still feeling the burn. And
how hard am I working to stay out of the political swamp that I do 20 minutes on a hot dog story from Fox? Okay.
I'm sorry, man. I'm dragging you into the political.
Oh no, no. I mean that's okay. It's just it was a personal thing. I was gonna stay out of it until someone else opened the door.
Well,
and then it's okay.
It's your buddy Jim from Louisiana, Stan.
Well, I mean, Kevin opened the door too. So, I mean, but I do have to take I do have to go somewhere else with this conversation for just a second, Jim.
Okay.
And that is this. And this is, I mean, this is kind of personal.
Go for it.
But my youngest daughter, for reasons that I find at once gratifying and baffling, has become absolutely fascinated with the Kennedy, with JFK's assassination.
Right.
Now, she's 19. Okay? So to anyone, who thinks that that is a story or an issue that's going away, although I must warn you, I am informed that she does buy into the Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone theory.
Oh man!
and I tell you this, I'm telling tales out of school, and I'm not making sport of my daughter. I would never do that. But I said, she told me that they're going to be traveling back east sometime this summer. From out where they are, and the promise has been made to her that they will stop and she will get to see the Book Depository and Dealey Plaza. And I said, good. I said, good. Because when you go up to the... I said, after you go up to the Book Depository, I want you to get on YouTube... And I want you to look up Bill Hicks, book the Bill Hicks Kennedy Assassination Book Depository. And she said, "Why?" I said, "Only after you've seen it will I tell you. And after you've watched that thing, then you'll understand why I wanted you to." Because she'd already told me that she was an acted alone. Kind of person, okay.
Yeah,
I mention all of this because I told her that, given her fascination with it, that I highly recommended, and I don't know, and I figured you would know. Is your dad's book available on like Kindle, or do you have to read it in hard copy form?
I would imagine it should be. I haven't really kept up with that, per se. I mean, I would imagine it should be. I don't know why it wouldn't be, unless it was some sort of, overt censorship.
Well, I mean, there has to be a market for it. It took like 10 years for one of my very favorite books to finally make it to Kindle, and it just did, you know, a few months back. So, I'll look and find out, but I want her to read On the Trail of the Assassins and see see if she is still a magic bullet girl.
Right. That's high praise indeed. I know if there were a heaven, my dad would be dancing. But since there's no heaven, he's not dancing.
But we can pretend for a minute that he is.
Okay. No, that's kind of why he wrote the book. And can even go back.
He wanted to leave a record for future generations.
That's it.
And if he is ever, if he is ever proven definitively correct, they better by God build a monument.
They're not. That's not going to happen. This is America. That's not the way the world. That's not the way America works. I don't think. I'm kind of. What's the word I'm looking for? Sarcastic, sardonic, some kind of sour word. I just don't see the truth ever really, because they put so much in covering the lie, and then, not only that, but then they cover, they'll jump over to anything that looks like, oh, well, maybe it wasn't us. And I think it was definitely an inside job.
Well, look at the murder of Julius Caesar, and frankly, although they were completely different sorts of people, I see the murder of Caesar and the murder of JFK in the same light, because that happened over, let's see, 16 plus 20, that's 2,060 years ago, or so, and I'm never quite sure what to do with the juncture between BCE and CE, but 2,059 or 2,060 years ago, and we don't even have the full story on that. And back then they didn't have the full story on it, because, you know, everything went to shit immediately after that assassination, and sorting it. I mean, there are still different schools of thought on, say, Mark Antony's role. Because it looked like, you know, because Caesar walks up to the Temple of Venus Victrix, attached to the Theater of Pompey that was serving as the Senate House that day, and a guy pulls him aside and says, "Hey, Mark Antony, I got to talk to you." And Caesar has already given his lictors the day off, so he walks in by himself, not even so much as Mark Antony with him. And that meant that, yeah. And that meant that, you know, it could go down. And so, no. You know, was Mark Antony in it? Was he out of it? You know, what? Because he certainly made a power play, and then you've got the added mystery of the fact that, I mean, Mark Antony was severely pissed when he found out that, because Mark Antony thought he was going to be Caesar's heir, and then they go over to the Shrine of the Vestals. And they pull out Caesar's will, and lo and behold, it's this pimply faced, little skinny, puny, half sickly grand nephew named Octavian. And you know, we ain't talking about chicken feed there.
No, a lot of power, a lot of money and control lost. And, I mean, that's the funny thing about it. I mean, right away they. Okay, that's the whole thing about the lone gunman assassin. With both, I'm going to say JFK. I'm going to throw in MLK and Bobby Kennedy. I mean, Bobby Kennedy was threatening.
Oh yeah, there's holes you can drive a truck through on JFK, MLK, and RFK.
Yeah, well, Martin Luther King was pissing off, and it doesn't come up because they say he was basically killed for civil rights. They didn't care, they being, I don't know, the powers that be in my instinct, and they didn't care about that.
He was there to support a garbage workers' strike, whether the garbage in Memphis, whether the garbage workers were black or white.
And after the
Riverside Church speech a year before, he had made himself a vocal opponent of the Vietnam War. And started talking about the predatory ways of capitalism, and Bingo. All of a sudden, it's not just him agitating for Negro rights anymore. He's a full-on revolutionary, and revolutionaries got to go.
bingo, kind of like Bernie almost now. I mean, in a very subtle way.
At least in 2016, Hillary hasn't said that she's staying in through California in case somebody assassinates Bernie.
Not yet, but I mean, from what I understand, she's not even going to have the. She's not going to have the vote to get in. But I mean, seems like to me a lot of them are already so much in the bag for her, and. I mean, Bernie's got such a hard road to hoe. I mean, he's almost got to win 75%.
Yeah, no. The battle, Jim. The battle is uphill, and the battle has always been struggle. I hate war analogies and eliminationist language. The struggle has always been uphill, and we've known that from the get go. It was never going to be easy, and it was never anything. Let's be clear. It was never anything but a long shot.
You know, you make me feel a little bit better. Although, God, I hate to see us fail again. I mean, and when I say that, it seems like to me, in the 50-plus years I've been alive, the good, quote-unquote, good guys or the halfway decent guys have never really won. I mean, it's always, that's the thing that blows me away about the right wing and the American people. They just seem to be fascinated with it as it just continues to drag them down and rip them off to the nth degree. But yet, they're good enough. And actually, they're not even that good. I think it's just stupid. You know, and I know this is helping win over votes for my cause, but... They just seem to fall into, well, you know, if I really work hard, and the whole work hard thing's being replaced by, not full-time workers, so it takes forever to get on full-time. You know what I'm talking about. I mean, you're, in a way, a lot more aware of that, about the only place you can get on full-time is probably the coal mine. And like you said...
Now, they ain't hiring.
They're just scaling out getting rid of those jobs, right? So, I mean, they've got all bases covered. I mean, I think they, being the powers that be, probably decided to start working with this floor plan right after. I mean, they're planning ahead, what to deal with. Groupthink, where there's no such thing as maybe in some sort of democratic version, and even then you got the DNC. The DNC is so corrupt; it's a joke. I mean, I got my letter from the DNC, and I was going to resign, but I'm going to stay in it. I guess. I mean, not stay in it. I'm not even going to send it back or anything. But. And then I was thinking, trying to do the Tom Hartman thing. We're all getting involved, trying to change something. And, realistically, between you and me and the Horn family and the boys.
And the whole planet, yeah.
That ain't going to mean shit to a tree. That ain't going to change a goddamn fucking thing. So very little. And if you really start to really change things up, you got trouble.
Well, but there's an obverse to that coin as well, Jim. And that's this. Looking for a savior to make the change is never a good tactic. If you're going
to the mirror.
If you're all so-called revolutions have to begin with people, not leaders. A one-man parade, a one-person parade, ain't much of a parade. And the fear is that, and Bernie's trying to do a little something about it now. The fear is that all the people who've been energized by Bernie are just going to disappear like fog going away in the morning sun if he's not the nominee. And if that's the case, then there was never any hope of and I hesitate to even use the word revolution, okay? Because it's got too much freight. But there was never that much hope of significant change to begin with. Because presidents aren't wizards. They're presidents. In a very in a very, very attenuated system to begin with. Now, Bernie gets the nomination, Bernie beats Trump, Bernie becomes president. Bernie is the kind of guy who is not going to shrink from going after the Republican majority in the Congress. Bernie has, by virtue of what of the generational demographic he occupies, Bernie has more than a little bit of FDR in him. He just doesn't have he doesn't come from the wealth class FDR came from, but he comes from the philosophical place that he occupied. And so, I have no doubt that if he were the president, the 2018 midterms, and I feel creepy even mentioning those, would be hell among the yearlings. Now, on the other hand, Hillary is not going to go out and campaign against Looney Gohmert or Steve Cantaloupe's King. She's damn sure not going to go face to face and go and politic against Paul Ryan up in Janesville, Wisconsin. Now she did go down and stump for Alison Lundergan Grimes in when she was given what was thought to be a meaningful challenge to Mitch McConnell in Kentucky a couple of years back. But the problem with that was that Alison Lundergan Grimes was being a Hillary-style candidate. In other words, middle of the road, no real progressive values, nothing to energize anybody. You know, the same thing that wound up getting the asses beaten of milquetoast Democrats all over the country.
Right. Basically, a corporatist. People kind of see through that. Because what's the line? Given the choice between voting a Republican and Republican-lite, i.e. a Democrat, the people...
Voters will always choose the genuine article.
Yeah.
So,
I find crazy.
Well, I mean, you're old enough. Do you remember ice milk in the freezer section of the grocery store?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was less expensive than ice cream. And it didn't.
Oh, yeah.
And it didn't taste as good. And it wasn't as good. And it wasn't as satisfying. And given the choice, you always bought the ice cream, didn't you? Because it was real.
Yeah.
It wasn't a knockoff. It wasn't a watered-down alternative.
Yeah.
There you go. That's Blue Dog Democrats versus Republicans.
I mean, now you got me thinking, I got to make a Ben and Jerry's run.
Oh, dude. Yeah, a little what's that?
Food humor.
They do that fudge brownie thing, and oh my god! But since we went down this road, you still got Baskin Robbins around there?
Not that I know of.
No. Well, they do. I mean, if you're a chocolate freak, they do a chocolate fudge ice cream. Now it's not, it doesn't have a fudge ribbon through it. It's just hyper chocolate ice cream. I mean, it's like semi sweet. I mean, you can get the real chocolate bitterness in there, and oh my god. So, you know, there's make that.
Make your tongue slap your brains out.
Yeah, well, that and the Baskin Robbins German chocolate cake ice cream. Holy God. Hunks of chocolate cake, coconut, a stream of caramel with pecans worked through it. Whoa!
Well, I'm going to still stick with Bernie till the bitter end.
Me too. Me too. I'm not saying anything otherwise. I want him to make his case at the convention. And that way, once the Democratic National Committee has said, yes, Bernie, yes, we understand. You poll better against Trump. You're going to beat Trump. Hillary will probably stick both feet in her mouth and work on getting her hands in along the way, too. And there will probably be some horrifying October surprise. But we're going to go with Hillary because we're the Democratic Party. And what we do as the Democratic Party, we lose better than any political operation on earth. And it's who we are. And we're going to nominate Hillary.
That's what I see. And, you know, and real quick, in case everybody's thinking Bernie can run as a third-party candidate, from what I researched, I may have mentioned this to you, and I just happened to run across it. Right off the get-go, Bernie, by running in one party, even if he were to try and run in another party, he's like, there's like 8 or 12 states, I forget the number. You can't run again in another party. If you run in one party, like the Democratic Party, and then you try and run in another party, you can't run. A lot of states have laws, state laws, but it's, you know, like California's one, Louisiana stands one, there's six others. You can't run again.
But Jim, beyond that, he made it clear from the outset of his campaign that he would not do that.
Right. Well, that's just another reason. I mean, if California isn't in the running, you know, I mean, which will probably win if they don't steal it.
I mean, people are. I'm not trying to soften the blow or anything. I live in reality world. I deal with reality. And people are going to have to kind of come to terms with the fact, and I know that there's that Never Hillary bunch out there, and Bernie or bust. I understand that, and I'm not giving anybody any hell about it. But if things play out the way I expect them to, and if he is not the nominee, then you will hear him give a speech or see him give a speech in Philadelphia at the convention in which he calls upon everyone who voted for him to vote for Hillary, because we cannot afford the risk of a Trump presidency. I mean, something in my stomach just went and grumbled when I said that. But it's a fact. It's 99.9% likely to happen if he's not the nominee. It's how the process works. And Jesus, I sincerely hope that all the people who have poured time and energy into his campaign don't just go, fuck it, I'm going to sit out.
Yeah, well.
Because, see, I like to think that the Bernie people are better than the Hillary people. And I remember the Hillary people in 2008. I remember the ones who said, well, I'm a Puma. Party unity my ass. I'll never vote for that one. I want the first woman president now.
Man, what a disaster she's going to be. But I guess that's another story for another time. I'm going to let you go, let you philosophize with the next caller.
Okay.
Something to think about. I'm going to go ahead and still vote Green Party, if not Bernie.
Ain't no harm in doing that in Louisiana.
You may as well, too. I don't think Hillary stands much of a chance in West Virginia, does she?
Oh, no. She's going to get steamrolled by T-Rump.
Isn't life grand sometimes? Yeah, what's the thing? What's the curse? Living in interesting times.
Yep. That's some curse, that Chinese curse.
Yeah, you and I got it in spades.
And you know what? I don't know when or when I'll do it or even if I'll do it, but I may try to figure out a way to put you in touch with my daughter so you can talk JFK with her.
Definitely. I'm glad you mentioned that. I'll try and help her out any way possible.
You're a good man, Jim.
The lone assassin thing, I think I can spell it pretty quick, but I can point her out to some, I'd say, books would be on the Trail of the Assassins. I'd say watch the JFK movie.
Well, I suggested both. Now, the JFK movie's got a lot of fiction to it, but...
Not really. It kind of cuts things down because you're trying to fit it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it has to. It's too big a story. And that's what I mean. There are some composite characters in there. The Donald Sutherland The Donald Sutherland character is a composite character.
Right. Well, actually, that's based on the guy.
I know.
He wrote a great book. I'll tell you next time.
Yeah. I remember reading on him, and I was okay with it till I got to the part where later in life he started writing things that said, it's the Jews, I tell you, the Jews. And I went, oh, no.
No, well, you know what's weird? I noticed that a lot in the kind of, and whenever I see that, I kind of back away from it. I back away from it. It's just like,
oh, no. I throw my hands in the air and run screaming the other direction. I don't back away.
Well, I'm just trying to be diplomatic, you know.
Yeah, I know. Jim, have yourself a good evening, my friend. Go get that ice cream.
All right. Check you later.
All right. Later. Bye now. Our buddy Jim in Louisiana, Stan. And thus we go over to Scott in San Diego.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Scott. What's happening?
Oh, just sitting here ruminating.
How's the ruminating going?
Don't
you have to have like three stomachs like a cow to ruminate?
Oh, maybe I'm using the wrong word. I don't know.
No. Cows are ruminants, aren't they? Okay, never mind.
Well, anyway, just to add to what Jim was saying, definitely have your daughter check out Garrison's book on the Trail of the Assassins. But there are two other books that she would do very well to read. And I think I sent you links for them some weeks ago. One is called A Farewell to Justice: Jim Garrison, JFK's Assassination, and the Case That Should Have Changed History by Joan Mellon. It draws upon documents that were not available back in the late 60s when Garrison was pursuing his case. And I recommend the book highly. Also, a book called Destiny Betrayed: JFK, Cuba, and the Garrison Case by Jim DiEugenio. And they're both on Amazon, or if there are any bookstores near where she is, she can probably get them or have them ordered there.
Exactly.
But they're very, very, very good books.
Somewhere in my many stacks of books, I still have a copy of... And in fact, it's a first edition because it was sent out as a promo copy when I was at CNN of On the Trail of the Assassins.
Well, a lot of people are not aware that after the Clay Shaw trial back in 69 going into 70, I guess it was, Jim Garrison had written a book earlier than On the Trail of the Assassins. And it's been out of print for years, but it's very good. It's called A Heritage of Stone. And you can probably find a copy of it, you know, in a used bookstore or maybe even on Amazon. I got a copy of it for a couple of bucks about 15 years ago. And it's not easy to find, but it's also a good volume on the case.
Okay. I will make sure I'll make sure and pass that along. I jotted those down.
Yeah, that would be good. If she would read those books, it will disabuse her of any notion that Oswald either acted alone or quite possibly that Oswald had a thing to do with the shooting of Kennedy and Connolly. There's a better than even chance, and the book by Jim DiEugenio, Destiny Betrayed, reveals a lot of information about intelligence activities, U.S. intelligence activities, having to do with Oswald and some peripheral things, that they don't come right out and prove anything, but the information, albeit circumstantial, is compelling enough to make you realize that there was a hell of a lot more going on with Oswald as far as who he was and what he may have been up to than we're likely to ever know. I know that Hillary, there's been talk recently that she's going to release information about UFOs if she gets to be president. I would just as soon she release information about the demise of President Kennedy. I've heard some people say that he.
Well, you know, I read a story the other day that we're going to have that before he's out the door, President Obama is going to release some sort of information about, you know, UFOs.
Well, I've actually heard people who are of the opinion that Kennedy was going to release information, and that was supposedly one of the reasons he was killed. I mean, it's a grab bag of reasons. A lot of people had a lot of reasons to kill him, some more far-fetched than others, or less far-fetched.
Well, I go for the simplest explanation as most often, and that's, you know, less than simple. But no, that's the problem with the whole thing, Scott, is that there are too many doors left open, and some of them need to be closed. They really, really do.
Well, one way to simplify it, and I think I mentioned this to you in a previous call some months ago. One way to really simplify it is to consider what the official story was, that Oswald, using a 20-plus-year-old lousy Italian rifle that cost him all of $15, if that, managed to shoot, to fire the gun three times. The first bullet missed. The second bullet, which has come to be known the magic bullet, went through Kennedy and Connolly, broke one of Connolly's ribs and also one of his wrists.
You're right.
And emerged later in an almost totally pristine condition. But the problem with that is that bullet lost more lead. I mean, you could go, if you could find him and get permission, you could dig up John Connolly, the former governor of Texas, and find more lead still in his body, lost from that bullet, than is actually missing from the magic bullet.
Mm. Well, Scott, I've got to roll on because I got one more call on here that I want to hit before the night's out. But it's definitely, you know, it's obviously something that still, well, that the American people still want answers to, no doubt about it.
Yeah, well, good luck. Tell your daughter good luck, and I'm glad that she's willing to pursue the matter, because the more people who do that, the better off we can be.
All right, I will do that. Scott, you have a good evening, and my best to Punky.
Okay, see you, Bob.
Bye. And I'm going to go back over to the stress line before we head out the door. Jules wanted to call in to talk a little bit about a project of a very dear friend of the program, Roger, in Oregon. Is that you, Jules?
Yes, it's me. Am I coming through okay?
Oh, you're fine.
Okay, great. Yes, this is Jules Frazier. Roger, and I'm going to mess up his name again. Roger S. Essay is one of our listeners. He's also one of your listeners, and he's very dedicated to both networks. He's an absolutely swell fellow. He's really wonderful. He is the creator and artist of a very special project called the Remembrance Thread. And the Remembrance Thread is a memorial to those who have lost their lives in some of these these wars that have been fought for pretty much no reason, it seems like. And so many people have lost their lives. He has made this shroud, and it's over 200 feet long in length, and it's 3, 4, 5 feet wide, depending on where it's at. It's a dedication from the heart. I have a little write-up about it on FYINation.com.
And I noticed you also posted on Facebook.
Yeah, I posted it on Facebook, and I wanted to call because I know there are some people that may not be on Facebook. That's why I wanted to call in and let folks know that there is right up there. There's a video that goes with it, and there's also a sound file that I could not post on Facebook because Facebook just wouldn't accept it. But it's in his own words, and he describes the making of the rug and also his purpose behind it. He started this in 2003, and there are symbols on the rug that correspond to each individual that he has listed. There are also journal pages that correspond to each of these symbols. There are 10,227 symbols as of this writing, and there are over 9,000 U.S. service members and civilians. He does include civilians. There are 794 coalition troops and 387 journalists. He has included over 1,000 Vietnam veterans that were not included on the Vietnam War Memorial Wall because they did not, quote-unquote, qualify, because they did not pass away in Vietnamese soil. It's amazing work. The video is breathtaking when you view the how many symbols there are, and his words just are very poignant. So I encourage folks to go and take a look at the little write up and the information sheet.
And if you want everything. To see it, you can go to YouTube and simply type in the Remembrance Rug, REMEMBRANCE, the Remembrance Rug, and understand that this act of personal devotion and personal memorial is 2/3 of the length of a football field, if you want to get some idea of scope.
Yes.
And he has gone to great pains to note military units, branches of service, ethnicity, religion, what have you. And Roger just keeps adding to the rug. And I guess it's over 6,100 human beings lost long. And if you ever get a chance to go and see it, see it. Frankly, I don't know if Roger will ever. I think it's almost impossible that Roger can ever actually complete it. But
unless we ever stop writing, and I don't know that will ever happen. I don't know if that will ever happen.
I hope at some point in time, it winds up in the Smithsonian.
Yeah. He wants it to go to, if there are ever proper memorials, as he says, proper memorials. I think this is a proper memorial. But he says if there are ever memorials built for these wars that he is memorializing here, that he wants them, he wants it to go to those areas. But I think this is a proper memorial.
I do, too. But I also said a very long time ago that when we get around to making to finding some space on the mall in Washington, that the memorial to the fallen of the of what I call Bush War II should be done in the shape of a long, snaking, serpentine oil pipeline.
Yes.
Well, Jules, we're actually over time, but I'm glad you called in, and I'm glad we got to mention Rogers' work, because it deserves mention, and it is one of the best and most fitting memorials for the fallen of our latest military misadventure and abject disaster. That there is. I don't know of anything that even begins to touch it in terms of memorialization.
Neither do I.
Have a good evening, Jules.
Thank you. You too.
Bye now. And thus we come to a close. And back tomorrow for Titanic Tuesday. Good night, y'all.